Now we're holding page 146 in Nazir Ois Aleph. Why it is that we had a piece before that wasn't part of any Ois, I don't know. This part of Ein Yaakov was actually published, not but was actually compiled and published not by the original author of Yaakov ben Chaviv. He passed away and his son the Rabbah took it over, so I guess he had a different style of doing things. Okay, we talked about yesterday that there's a few different types of Nazir. You have the regular kind of nazir who takes a nazirus for 30 days or any amount after, or any amount above that. At the end of that time, he shaves and brings his three karbanos. If he becomes tameh in the middle, then he shaves, brings his three karbanos, and starts over again. That's a regular nazir. Then we talked yesterday about the nazir shimshon, which is we said Reb Shimon holds there's no such thing as a nazir shimshon, but Reb Yehuda and everybody else says that there is, and that would be a person who has special rules. He can never cut his hair like shimshon, and he can never eat or drink grape products, but he is allowed to become tamei mes, as we worked out yesterday that we see that shimshon did in fact become tamei mes various times when he fought against the plishtim. And then you have a third type that we mentioned called Nazir Olam, which is basically, so the Nazir Olam is basically a bunch of 12-month terms of Nazirus, one back to back. Actually, it's Machlokas Tanoim. In this sugya over here, how often a Nazir Olam cuts his hair and brings his karbanos, the halacha is 12 months. As the Gemara is going to learn over here, as we're going to have the piece over here that, according to Rebbe, that learns that part. So the a Nazir Olam, then the idea is every so often, 1 year, according to Rebbe, and that's the halacha, is he cuts his hair and he brings his three karbanos and starts his nazirus again. It's Machlokas who's showing him whether he actually shaves like a regular nazir or whether he only trims his hair. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Nazir olam hechaksiv. Where do we find any place where it talks in the Torah about a nazir? Where's an example of a nazir olam? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Rebbe Omer Avshalom Nazir olam haya. Avshalom, the son of David, who later on rebelled against him, was a Nazir olam. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Vayhimi Kates Arboim Shana, it happened after 40 years had passed, and the Gemara is going to explain soon 40 years from what. Vayomer Avshalom al Aviv, Avshalom says to his father, that the Gemara is shortening and quoting the Pasuk over here, that he wants to go to Hebron to bring Karbanos, and he says, Ki neder nader abdecha, b'shivti b'gshur ba'aram v'gomer, I made a neder when I was in Gshur in the country of Aram, that I'm going to bring that I'm going to bring Karbanos to Hashem. And so he says, Vashalom is nidri, and I'm going to fulfill my neder. The background here is as follows. We have in Sefer Shmuel, Avshalom was David's third son. Avshalom's eldest son, Amnon, you have the whole story with him and Tamar. To make a long story short, Avshalom was very angry on his sister's behalf of what Amnon had done to her. Avshalom and Tamar are actually full-blood siblings. Their mother was a Yefas-Toyar, the daughter of the king of Geshur. It's Machlokas Rishonim, whether Tamar, whether the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, that Tamar is not considered David's daughter, and that in fact Amnon would have been allowed Lahalacha to marry her. She says actually so in a pasuk, she says to Amnon, don't do what you're about to do to me. Speak to the king, he won't prevent us from getting married. So many Rishonim learn that because the Jewish soldier is allowed to have relations with the Yefas Torah one time before she's Nisgayer, so then Tamar was conceived from that. So then, according to that, she's biologically David's daughter, but she's not considered Lahalocha his daughter, and therefore she Taka could have married Amnon. Meanwhile, later on, this Macha, that was the name of this Yefas Torah, Taka became a Geyoris. She remained one of David's wives, and later on they had a son of Shalom. Tosfos in Kiddushin mentions a possibility, maybe in fact the Jewish soldier is not allowed that first bia while the woman is a goita, and according to that, they explain that maybe it means that when Macha was captured in battle, she was already pregnant with Tamar, and then she gave birth to Tamar after she'd already been captured, and in that case, she's not David's biological daughter at all. Be that as it may, Avshalom and Tamar are full blood siblings, and he took it very personally what Amnon had done to her. To make a long story short, he waited 2 years and then he took his opportunity and killed Amnon. Avshalom then killed Amnon. David is very upset about it. Avshalom ran away to Geshur, to his Zayda over there, to his Goyish Zaydi in Geshur. Kitzur Amaisa, eventually David is reconciled to him coming back to Yerushalayim, but then already Avshalom is starting to make plans to rebel against David and grab the kingship for himself. So when he's about to start the revolt, he's been working on lining up supporters in Eretz Yisrael. Now he can't very well start a revolt in Yerushalayim under David's nose, so he makes an excuse that he needs to go to Hebron. Why? His excuse is that back when I was in Geshur, I made a neder that if I come safely back to Eretz Yisrael, then I will serve Hashem. So now I want to go to Hebron and fulfill that neder. This was, keep in mind, this is the time after Mishkan Shiloh had just been destroyed. The Mishkan currently is in Givon, and you're allowed to, this is one of the periods in Jewish history when you're allowed to bring korbanos anywhere in Eretz Yisrael that you want. So it seemed a reasonable thing. And the Gemara elsewhere mentions that the vote was in Hebron, you could find the best sheep. It's a good grazing area, so the best sheep were to be found there. So Avshalom's excuse, he's going to go to Hebron to get the sheep from there, and then once he's already there, he'll bring the korbanos of his nezirus there. And David bought the excuse, and Avshalom goes over there and begins the revolt. So the point is that he's saying that I made a neder, and now I have to fulfill that neder. And what was the nature of this neder? This was nezirus. Uchtiv. He cuts his hair, says Rebbe, once every 12 months. Shenema, because we find also by Avshalom where it describes, every so often, every yomim that he would shave, then the Pasuk says his hair weighed a tremendous amount. Gemara and Soita tells us that Avshalom had unusual hair. In the end, he was killed by it because his hair got tangled in a tree while he's running. During the battle against David's army, and he ends up getting stuck in the tree, and they end up killing him. Now, the Gemara says over there, the Mishnah says Avshalom nisgar b'sara. He was proud of his hair, and lefichach nitla b'sara, and therefore he was hanged by his hair and eventually killed. Anyway, the Pasuk makes a big deal about how when he cut his hair, it weighed a tremendous amount. So the point is, Rebbe says, so we see that he was a nazir olam, and he would be cutting his hair once every 12 months.
Off the tree.
The reason he didn't cut himself off the tree, actually, it actually brings over there from a Gemara from the Gemara in Sota that he was about to, but then after all, to save his life, he'd be allowed to. But he looked and saw Gehenim open underneath him, so he realized he's not going to matter. He may as well stay put. Yeah. So how do we know that yomim la yomim means every 12 months? So Rebbe says v'yalef yomim yomim mi bote ori choyma. We learn gzeira shava of the word yomim from the case where a person sells a house in a walled city in Parshas Behar. Mahosim yudbeis chodesh, and there the pasuk says yomim ti yagulase. He has yomim to buy it back, and the next pasuk says ad malois la shana tmima. And when a whole year has passed, then he can't buy it back anymore. So we see that yomim means a year. Afkan yudbeis chodesh, the same way with the nazar olam, means 12 months. So the Gemara gets into a further discussion about it. There are other places in the Torah, in Tanakh, where we use the word yomim and it means other units of time. Why don't we say it means that by the nazir? And the Gemara goes through a whole sugya about that, and it brings actually several other opinions that the nazir olam would cut his hair more often than that. Okay. Anyway, having gone through all of that, the Gemara asks, Hani aboim shana mai avidtayu. When we're saying that Avshalom began his revolt, it mikates aboim shana. After 40 years from what? Now, it can't mean the 40th year of David's reign. David ruled for 40 years, and we find the Psukim, the story of Avshalom's revolt is in Shmuel Beis from Perek Tesvav through Yud Ches, and then you have, after that, you have several more Prokim, Yud Tes through Chaf Dalet, which describe other events that happen after that. You have a revolt by a fellow named Sheva ben Bichri, you have a three-year famine, you have other events that are described over there. So it can't be that Avshalom's revolt took place in the last year. So the answer is Rabbi Nahuroy Omer Meshum Rabbi Yeshua Lekates Mem Shana Shashala Lahen Melech. It was 40 years since the Jewish people had first asked for a king. So Rashi, or whichever Pirush, or whichever Mephorish it is that's printed over here under Rashi's name, the Rivon, like we talked about yesterday, and Tosfos here, and also in Tamura, the Gemara brings this, Rashi brings over there in Tamura, have various calculations. The gist of all the calculations is Shmuel led the Jewish people after Eli passed away for 13 years. Shmuel was conceived shortly after Eli had become Kohen Gadol. He was Kohen Gadol and Shofet, and the Pasuk says that he served as Shofet for 40 years. Right when he was appointed was when Chana came to the Mishkan over there and then davened for a child, and then she became pregnant shortly after that, and Shmuel was born. So Shmuel was 39 when Eli passed away. Shmuel lived to be 52. Chapsoi said that he led the Jewish people for 13 years. Of those 13 years, 2.5 of them were, two of them were when Shaul was king. Shaul was king for only 2 years. But you have before that, they had asked for a king, and then it took a little while until Shaul was appointed, and then you have eventually when Shmuel passed away, then Shaul outlived him by only a few months. So Bekitzer, it comes out therefore that when they asked for a king, the Mefoshim over here bring from Seder Olam, it was the tenth year of Shmuel's leadership. So after that, then you have 3 more years until Shmuel passed away, and about a half a year after that, until Shaul was killed in battle. Then David became king. First, he was king only over Shevet Yehuda, and eventually, after 7.5 years, the other Shevatim accepted him as king as well. So now, when you talk about 40 years since they first asked for a king, then that brings us to the 36th or 37th year of David's kingship. So the point is, the connection is that there's a few different ways that there's a connection over there. One point is, Tosfos makes the point, since at that point they rebelled against Hashem, because Shmuel criticized them for that, what are you asking for a king for? So now the Pasuk is dating another rebellion to based on that first one. First they rebelled against Hashem, and now 40 years later, Avshalom is rebelling against David. Another point is also, some of the Mefarshim say, Avshalom knew that David is destined to reign for 40 years, and he figured the 40 years starts from when they first asked for a king. So Tana, and we learn in a Braisa, Oysa Shana, that's what we just said, Oysa Shana, Shashal Olahan Melech, Hichnas Esser, the Shmuel Aramasi, it was the 10th year of Shmuel's leadership, and then you have another two and a half, three years of Shmuel's leadership, and then you have a few months of Shaul by himself after Shmuel passed away, and then you have David's kingship. So you have the exact calculation, it was the 36th or 37th year of David's reign in Tmura. Tosfos brings some based on some other considerations. It may have been the 35th year of David's reign. Whatever the point is, it comes out the beginning of the 40th year since they had asked for a king. Misha Omar Perek Shlishi, so Perek continues by dealing with various dinim of Nazirus, and then at one point it talks about, now you can have a case, we know from Parshas Matos, that a husband can be made for certain nedarim of his wife's, one of them being a neder of Nazirus. So now, what happens, it describes a case where she made a neder of Nazirus, and then she became Tomei, and now she has to bring the Korbanos Tumah of a Nazir, which are 2 birds and a sheep. And the husband finds out about it, and he's made for the neder. Does she still have to bring the korbanos? So the Gemara discusses an opinion that she has to bring the chatos, but not the oila. So the Gemara, of the 2 birds, she has to bring the 2 birds. It's supposed to be 1 chatos and 1 oila. She has to bring the chatos, but not the oila. So the Gemara asks why, manafshach, if the husband has canceled the neder as if it never existed, then she should not have to bring any korbanos. And if it's only that it was canceled from now and on, then she should have to bring both. So the answer is basically that she, in principle, the neder is gone. However, she committed a certain aveira in the first place by making a neder of nazirus, and therefore we're going to still keep her on the hook for bringing the chatas. Meaning that's not the kind of aveira for which a person would bring a chatas all by itself. But once she's already considered a choite for reasons that now the Gemara is going to bring, then already we're going to keep her on the hook to bring the chatas as well. So the Gemara says, Tanya Rabbi Lazar Akapa Berebi Omer. Berebi doesn't mean the son of Rebbe. It's a title for an outstanding Talmud Chacham. So he says, "Mat tamad loyma v'chipper olav ma'ashachota alam nafesh." What does the pasuk mean? It describes by a nazir who became tamei that the kohen should bring a kapara for him that he sinned on a soul. V'chibe eiz nefesh chotazeh. Now, what soul did he sin with? Elam pnesh tzir nafshim na'yayin nikra choite. Only because he deprived himself of wine, and therefore for that he's called a choite. Says Rabbi Lazar Akapa. Now, the other Chachamim disagree with that, the Gemara mentions here, and in Tainus, and they hold that Adrabah, such a person, can be called a Kodesh, and they understand that Mashachota ala Nafesh means that he was careless and allowed himself to become Tomei Mes. But anyway, so Rabbi Lazar Akapa continues, V'kavachomer, Uma zeshalit sir atzme elemen ayayin, madach, this person who deprived himself of only wine, nikra choite, and for that, the Pasuk is calling him a sinner, hametzar atzme, we call dover. Then if a person deprives himself of all kinds of things, for example, if he takes on himself a neder to fast, then how much more so that he should be called a choite. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar Kapper says, based on that, in Gemara and Tainus, that a person shouldn't be taking voluntary fasts on himself, and if he is, he's called a choite. So the Gemara asks for her high krob and nozer tomei ksiv. Isn't this pasuk talking specifically about a nozer tomei? Va'anan afilu nozer tar kamyanin. Rabbi Lozer Akapa is saying, what Rabbi Lozer Akapa is saying applies equally well to a nozer tar. If he's saying the point is he deprived himself of wine, then that's true even if he never becomes tomei during the nazirus. So why would the Torah mention this point according to him, davka in connection with a nozer tomei? And the answer is, as a matter of fact, Rabbi Elazar HaKappa does hold that even a nozer who remains tahor is also considered a sinner. The high time of krub and nozer tomei, he says the reason why the Torah specifies this specifically by a nozer tomei hoyel v'shana b'chet, because he repeated the avera. Because now, so there's two ways of explaining that. One is he already made a neder of nazirus, and now he's deprived himself of wine. And now on top of that, he also was careless and went and became tomei. So and now he has to start his nazirus all over again. So therefore, the Torah says that he should be considered a choite for that. So in other words, so one point is because, in other words, at this point maybe he should be matir neder. Why is he going and continuing and starting the nazirus over again? And another point is, why is he careless and became tomei in the first place? Iyun Yaakov also refers to the point that since Hashem protects tzaddikim from averus, then if he were on the level he's supposed to be on, then Hashem would have protected him in the first place, that there wouldn't be this oinus, and because it's basically avera gereres avera, according to Rabbi Elazar Kapper, because he made a neder of nazirus, which he shouldn't have done in the first place, therefore the Eibishter doesn't protect him from accidentally becoming tamei. Okay. Hareni nozer v'shama perek revi. So at one point in this perek, it talks about, again, speaking of the dinim of a woman making a neder of nazirus and her husband being made for it. So it describes. So you can have a situation. The Mishnah brings, and here the Gemara is going to bring a braisa that expands on it, where her husband was made for the neder, but she didn't know about it. So now she goes and violates her nazirus, but in fact there's no nazirus for her to violate because her husband was already made for it. So the Gemara says Tanan Rabbanan. The pasuk says Isha Haferam Vashem Yislach La. So the pasuk says that her husband has revoked the neder, and Hashem will forgive her. So why does Hashem have to forgive her if the neder is revoked? The Isha Shehefa La Baila. It's talking about this kind of case where her husband revoked and canceled her neder. Vehilo Yoda, and she didn't know about it. Akasa Medaber is what the pasuk is talking about. She tzricha kapara usricha. So now she needs a kapara and a forgiveness because she thought she was breaking her neder, and now it turns out that in fact she was not. Because nevertheless, she still needs a kapara for the fact that she thought to do an avera. An interesting point in this that a number of Mephoshim deal with is that the Gemara says Machshava Ra in a Kodesh Baruch Hu Mitzayir for the Maisa, that when it comes to a thought to a mitzvah, a person thought to do a mitzvah and he wasn't able to do it because of an onus, then Hashem credits him with the mitzvah. But with Averis, it's not so, with the exception, the Gemara says, in Kedushin of Avodah Zarah. So that being the case, why does she need a kapara over here? She thought she was doing something wrong, but it turns out that she wasn't. There's a lot of different answers among them that there it's talking about where no maisa was done at all. He or she did a maisa b'poyol. Just it turns out that the maisa b'poyol was not in fact an avera because the husband had already canceled the neder. And there's a few other explanations. One interesting one is that building on this idea about a maisa or not, when she does it, you know, we learned a couple of days ago at the end of yesterday, actually, we learned at the end of Nedarim that sometimes an avera, sometimes being able to do something in a derech avera is more sweet to a person. Mayim gnuvim yimtiku, like we learned about. So therefore, when a person is eating something or doing something which he thinks it's also, he has a certain hanah from it that he might not have had if he thought that it was completely mutter. So now, therefore, just for that hana alone, for the fact that he's thinking that what he's having is a hana from an avera, and it turns out in the end it's not an avera, for that he needs a kapara. As opposed to, again, there it's talking about where there's no hana involved. There we're talking about that he thought to do an avera, and he didn't actually end up doing it, and there was no particular hana involved. So the Gemara continues. When Rabbi Akiva would reach this pasuk, would learn this pasuk, he would cry about it, about the implication of this pasuk. He would say like this. Madoch then was saying, based on this, a person who intended to pick up a piece of chazir flesh, and instead he ended up picking up a piece of kosher meat, of lamb's meat, ton kaparo slicha. Based on what we just said, he needs a kapara and he needs forgiveness from the Eibishter because he thought that he was doing something wrong. So then Rabbi Akiva says, I'm a scaven lavas biyode, besar chazir. So then if he actually intends to pick up chazir flesh, and he does in fact pick up chazir flesh and does in fact eat it, how much more so what a kapora and slicha he needs. So you see from this, in other words, the seriousness of an avera, that you see that even just the thought of it alone requires a kapora or slicha. Ben Yehoyada points out a couple of interesting things. Why Dafka used Besar Chazir as the example? An example that the Gemara is going to go on to give over here involving an Oshem Tolui involves, for example, different types of Chelev. If a person were to eat Chazir Flesh or something that he wasn't sure whether it's Chazir Flesh or not, he wouldn't be bringing an Oshem Tolui because there's no Kores involved. It's only a Lav. So he explains, first of all, famously, we know a chazir sticks out its feet, pretending like it's tahor, and really it's tamei. So we're using over here that the Yetzirah does that. He acts like a chazir and tries to pretend that the thing is mutter and try to find, like the chazir sticking out its hooves, that there's good reasons to do it. So that's one point, and then you also have, he brings also the famous point, osid chazir li tahor, and in the future the chazir is going to become tahor. So the same way, averus eventually is also osid li tahor. A person does tshuva me'ava and zernus nasa le kazachias, and therefore chazir is a very appropriate metaphor for it. He also goes on to explain, by the way, I mean, so what does Rabbi Akiva need this Kavah Chomer for? I mean, it says very clearly in the Torah that it's also to eat Chazir, and that a person does. He's Chayev Malkus. What do you mean that Rabbi Akiva has to make a big deal of finding a Kavah Chomer that he needs Kaporo or Slicha? So we're talking about, he says, let's say, for example, you're talking about a person where it's Pikuach Nefesh. So let's say, for example, he only needed one piece of meat because of Pikuach Nefesh. So now he has a piece in front of him. He has a piece of chazir and a piece of kosher meat. So he has the taiva for the chazir flesh, and he ends up actually picking that up, eating it, not realizing that where instead he could have picked up the tle instead. So you would think that, listen, he was mutter in principle to eat the chazir. So we're saying that no, nevertheless, he needs a kapara because why was he having a taiva for the chazir flesh in the first place? Even though it's mutter for him for kuach nefesh, nevertheless, the fact that he had a taiva and that the Eibishter actually ended up that he actually picked it up, then that requires kaporo slicha. Then where Rabbi Akiva would continue, he was a similar concept. The Pasuk says about a person who's chayiv an oshem toloi, v'lo yoda v'oshem v'nosa avoyna. You have a case where a person didn't know whether the thing in front of him is also a mutter, and he ate it, or otherwise had hana from it, and he's guilty, and therefore he's guilty, and he bears his sin. So Rabbi Akiva says the same thing. So you can make a kavah chomer from that. Mishnah skaven lalas biyoda b'sautle. Same idea. He intended to pick up a piece of, here it's kind of the opposite actually. The other previous one was he intended to pick up tray for meat and instead he picked up kosher. Now we can talk the other way around. Mishin is skaven lalas biyode b'sar tle. He intended to pick up the kosher meat, the lamb's meat, v'ola biyode b'sar chazir, and instead he picked up the chazir flesh, and what would that be? For example, he has one piece over there where it's a suffix, whether it's shuman or chaylev, which is the kind of case, chaylev is an isur kares, so that would be the kind of case where if he does b'shoigig and he knows that it was chaylev, if he ate chaylev b'shoigig, he brings a chatas, and if he's not sure, then he'd bring an oshem tolui, omakrov, nosa avoyna, and the pasuk says he bears his guilt because that was careless of him. What are you doing eating something that there's a suffix on it? Mishin is scaven lalas biyode b'sar chazir. So the same way, Rabbi Akiva would make a kavachomer from that if he intended to pick up the chazir v'ola biyode b'sar chazir, and he actually ended up picking up the chazir. Alachas kama v'kama. How much more so that he needs a kaporo slicha. Isi ben Yehuda, Omer. So Isi ben Yehuda says somewhat the same thing, but he learns differently. Now you have machloikas in the Sechta Krisus about this case of Oshem Tolui. What is the case where we know, for example, an Oshem Tolui would only be again for something where if it was certain that he did it b'shoigig, then he'd be bringing a chatas. So therefore, and in turn, that would be something that if done b'mezid would be chayiv koris. So chazir, for example, is not in that category, but chaylev is. Now you have machloikas and krisos. What's the scenario when he would bring an oshem tolui? Is it where he has one piece in front of him, which he's not sure if it's shuman or chaylev, shuman, meaning kosher, fat, chaylev, is the tray for fat, and he eats it, and now he's not sure, he wasn't sure in the first place, that's he's bringing an Ashim Tolerie, or is it then no? In order for him to bring an Ashim Tolerie, it has to be that there's one piece of there that's known to be treif and another one that's known not to be. So it would have to have two pieces in front of him, one shuman, one chalev. He ate one of them. He's not sure which one. And the other one has disappeared and we don't know what happened to it. So now, according to the other opinion, only in that case would you bring the Ashim Tolerie, but not in the first case because it's called Lo Ikba Isura. There's no Isur established there in the first place because you don't know about this one piece, whether it's shuman or chalev. So now, Isi Ben Yehuda holds that second way, that you have to have beis chatichas, you have to have two pieces. So therefore, he can't learn like Rabbi Akiva, that you're talking about where he has one piece in front of him, which is Suffolk Shuman, Suffolk Chalev. So therefore, he has to learn a little differently. If you can make a kavach omer, if a person intended to pick up kosher meat, and instead he picked up tereif meat, where the parallel as far as an oshim toleri would be, there are two pieces in front of him, one chalev, one shuman. The nasa and he eats one of them, and we don't know which one he ate. The nasa avoner, then he bears his guilt, and he has to bring an oshim toleri. And by the way, the Oshim Tolerie is costs a lot more than the Chatos that he would have to bring if it's a Vadai. So it's a famous explanation. I think it's actually from the Sifra, but I don't remember that. The vote is when a person does something, when a person definitely did the Issur B'Shogeg, Taka feels very bad about it, and therefore he's already in a mood to do tshuva, and therefore the Torah doesn't impose on him such an expensive korban, as opposed to when it's a suffix, whether he did it in the first place, then he's rationalizing how bad could it be? Maybe it wasn't even an Issur in the first place, and therefore the Torah imposes on him a much more expensive korban. So Isi Ben Yehuda continues, I'm scaven lalas biyadi b'sar chazir. Well, then if he intended to pick up chazir, v'ola biyadi b'sar chazir, and he taka picked that up and ate it, alachas kama v'kama, how much more so that he should feel guilty for it, and that he should be doing tshuva and realize that he needs kaporo or slicha. Al dover ze yidvu hadovim. And Isi Ben Yehuda says, on this kind of thing, those who have the sensitivity to feel bad about such things should taka feel bad about it and realize that how serious an avera is and how much kapara slicha it requires. This expression yidvu, Tosfos explains, is Rosh Tevis for the expression by the Oshem Tolui, yoda v'oshem v'nosa. So that's why he uses this expression yidvu to hint at that pasuk that people should take the lesson of that pasuk to heart and realize that's what the Torah is telling you, that the seriousness of doing an issu even where he intended to do something that was mutter. So why is Isi Ben Yehuda finishing off with that point? Why didn't Rabbi Akiva mention that point? Etz Yosef explains that based on what Tosfos said about the machlokas and halacha between Rabbi Akiva and Isi Ben Yehuda, so he's saying that al dover zeh, on this kind of thing, where you have davka, where you have one piece among two pieces, is what the Torah is talking about, v'lo yodav oshem, as opposed to, if it was only one piece, then there's not going to be that yodav oshem v'nos avoni, because then in fact, he's not bringing an oshem toleri. So on the other hand, Ben Yehoyada says that actually it's not part of Isi Ben Yehuda's statement. It's actually the end of the Tana of the Braisa is saying this, meaning that here you have all the time, probably when we say vidui and we include many things in vidui that each of us individually didn't necessarily do. So why are we doing it? Is because even we didn't do those Averis, but we might have had a hero on them. So we're saying Yidvu Adovim, so a person should actually take a feel bad about that, the very fact that he thought to do an Isser, and like we said, to begin with all of this, this woman who thought that she's doing an Isser, and it turned out that she's not, because it turns out her husband was Mefer. Nevertheless, a person should tackle, feel bad about it, and realize that they need kapara for it, and then include it in their vidui. So Yidvu Adovim is also Meloshin vidui, actually, he says. Okay. Continuing on this topic then, of where you have a person does something which he thought was an Avera and it turns out that's not, and related things like that, where a person, you can have two people do the same thing and one of them is doing a Dvar Mitzvah and the other one is doing a Dvar Avera. So the Gemara says, Omer Rabba Bachana Omer Rabbi Yechanan. My dichtiv, What's the meaning of the pasuk? Ki yeshorim darchei Hashem. The ways of Hashem are straight. But tzaddikim yelchuvam. The tzaddikim will go and they will walk in them. Ufoshim yikoshluvam. And the deliberate sinners will stumble in them. So in other words, the point of the question is, if the road is straight, then how are the poshim stumbling in it? So we have to understand, therefore, that's talking about something where the tzaddik and the poshea might be doing the same thing, but they have very different outcomes. Moshal Shnei Bnei Adam. By the way, you have this post that comes up. There's a little meisela with it. The No to be Huda, when Chassidus started spreading, the No to be Huda was one of the big menagdim to Chassidus. In particular, when the saying of L'shem Yichud started to become widespread, then he was very against it, and he wrote a tshuva criticizing this practice of including it in davening. And he finishes off his tshuva with he takes this pasuk and then does a play on words. It said Yeshorim Darchei Hashem V'Tzadikim Yelchuvam V'Chassidim Yikoshluvam. He says instead of poshim. And it's printed in his tshuva. So the story goes that years later, after the machlokas had quieted down, an enikol or someone of the Noda Behuda was going to republish his tshuva, and he wanted to change the pasuk back to the way it originally says. So one of the tzaddikim of that time, I don't remember who, tells him, "Don't. You zeda turned poshim into chassidim. Don't go turning chassidim back into poshim." Anyway, so. So, Moshe l'shnei bnei Adam should solo as pischeim. You have two people roasted and ate their korban and roasted their korbanas Pesach. Echad ochlo l'shem mitzvah. One of them ate it for the purpose of fulfilling the mitzvah. The echad ochlo l'shem achila gasa. The other one ate it in a gluttonous way. So not for the purpose of the mitzvah. Zesh ochla l'shem mitzvah tzaddikim yochuvam. So the first one can be described as he went in the way of Hashem and he's a tzaddik. He did the mitzvah properly. V'zesh ochla l'shem achila gasa uposhim yikosh luvam, as opposed to the one who ate it as achila gasa will be the posheah. Tosfos actually points out that in some other places in Shas, it implies that achila gasa is not considered eating at all. So in that case, if he eats as achila gasa, how can we talk about it? Wait, let's learn the next line of the Gemara and then we'll talk about it. So there you have, they're doing the same thing, but one is a tzaddik and the other one is a pesheya. But Amalei Rish Lakish says to Rabbi Yochanan, "Hi, Rosha Karislei. How could you call the person who ate it for achila gasa? How can you call him a Rosha? Nihid leikavod mitzvah and amuvcher. Fine, he didn't do the mitzvah in the proper way because he should have had kavana for the mitzvah. Pesach mius who dekavod. The fact is, he was yotze the mitzvah of eating the korban Pesach. Now here's where Tosfos points out that there are other places where the Gemara says that achila gasa is not considered eating, and therefore, according to that, he wouldn't be yotze eating the korban Pesach. So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. One of them is that the Rish Lakish is objecting, look, if the guy is full, what do you want from him? He couldn't help it if he was full at the time. We have, you know, the din is on Erev Pesach, you're not supposed to eat too much. So that you're not full for the Seder, but nevertheless, if he didn't do that, and for whatever reason he's full, you can't brand him a Rosha for that. But then Tosfos goes on to say, there's actually two different definitions of achila gasa. You can have where a person is eating it as a glutton. He's eating it because he's hungry and he likes the taste, because he wants the taste of it. And then you can have a kind of achila gasa where he's eaten so much that the sight of food is nauseating to him. When the Gemara elsewhere says achila gasa is not considered achila, it's talking about that second type. So yeah, if he ate that way, then he wouldn't be yotze the mitzvah of korban Pesach. But here we're talking about more the first type. So he's eating it not for the sake of the mitzvah, but rather he's eating it in a gluttonous way. And so Rish Lakish says, fine, he's not doing it for the proper purpose of the mitzvah, but nevertheless, that's a long way from calling him a Rosha. An interesting point, by the way, is that in the Gemara over here, Rabbi Akiva Eger refers to a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and a Turei Evan on it from the Shagas Arya that discusses the question. We often say mitzvah tzrichas kavana. You're doing a mitzvah. For example, hearing shofar, it has to be you're doing it for the sake of the mitzvah. So how can Rish Lakish be saying over here that this guy is eating the korban Pesach just to fill his stomach and not for the purpose of the mitzvah, and nevertheless we're still saying that he fulfilled the mitzvah? So the Turei Evan gives an answer over. So there's various Achronim talk about it. The one answer that the Turei Evan gives is the difference between, for example, matzah. This particular matzah is not necessarily meant to be eaten for the mitzvah. You could eat it for the mitzvah. You could also instead save it for another time and eat it when there's no mitzvah to eat matzah at all. And the same thing with a shofar, and the same thing with the other things. As opposed to the Korban Pesach is being shechted and is being brought for the purpose of eating it. So as long as he ate it, as long as he didn't eat it, the second kind of achila gasa, like Tosfos is saying, then at least, fine, he didn't have kavana, but nevertheless, it's like there's an inherent kavana in it, because the whole purpose of it is for the purpose of that mitzvah. An interesting thing in it, by the way, is that we're saying that he didn't do mitzvah and amuvcher. So, a related point to that is that you can have, you know, a person might be, you know, you have all that, you have a lot of times a person is doing a mitzvah and, or even not a mitzvah, a person can be doing a dvar harashus. He can be eating taka, and at least, you know, let him at least, as long as he has to eat anyway, let him taka have in mind that it's in order to serve the Eibishter, and therefore, like, he's picking up a mitzvah for free, almost. Like, you have a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that's relevant to this, that describes over there where the Eibishter eventually judges the nations, and first the Romans come forward, and then the Persians, and then each other nation, and the Eibishter asks them, so what did you accomplish in your history? And each one of them is listing all the great things they did to advance civilization, and the Eibishter says, you showed him that you didn't do it for the right purpose. You're claiming that you did it so the Jewish people can learn Torah and do mitzvahs, and he only did it for your selfish reasons. Meaning, in other words, the Eibishter is telling them, look, you were going to build those bridges, and you were going to be building those markets, and this and that and the other. At least you could have had in mind at the same time that you're doing it L'Shem Shemayim, and at least you'd get, you're doing the same things anyway, but you're doing it L'Shem Shemayim, and you'd get the credit for that. Like this, you lose out on it. So here, this Gemara is making basically the same point. If a person is going to eat the Korban Pesach anyway, fine, he's going to be Yotze either way, but let him taka do it with the Kavana to be Yotze the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. And then he's picking up another mitzvah in the bargain as well. Anyway, so the point is, Rish Lakish says that can't be an example of tzaddikim yochuvam ufoshim yikashluvam. Ella, so rather, Rish Lakish says, mashal shnei bnei adam. Picture two people, ze ishto v'achoyse ima babayis. One of them has his wife and his sister together with him in the house. Ze ishto v'achoyse ima babayis. And the other one also has his wife and sister with him in the house. One of them winds up having relations with his wife and the other one with his sister. Zeshin is damna le'ishto, you can say on him tzadikim yochuvam. Vezeshin is damna le'achoyse, you can say on him ofoshim yikoshluvam. So again, this is part of this idea Marsha mentions in Hodias. Eitz Yosef brings it over here. If he were a tzadik, the Eibishter would have prevented him, would have not caused that he does such an aveira. So,
even though the woman probably cried out,
what the woman did, I don't know, but whatever the case, maybe she thought her husband was there, I don't know, whatever. But be that as it may, he didn't know, and therefore, he didn't know, but nevertheless, here you have one of them as a tzaddik, and he intended to have relations with his wife, and the Eibishter taka arranged that she's the one he ended up with, and the other one is not such a tzaddik, and therefore he's a pesheya, and therefore the Eibishter causes that he winds up in that situation. So the problem with that is, the Gemara says, "Mi dummy, how can you compare that?" Anan choda derech kamunin. The pasuk is talking about one way. Ki yishonim darech. Okay, darech is in plural, but the point is, we're saying that within that one road, tzadikim yochuvam ufoshim yikoshluvam. Hocha shtei drachim. Here you're talking about the wife versus the sister. It's two drachim. So in other words, you don't have what the tzaddik did and was not nichshol, and what the rasha did and was nichshol. It wasn't on the same thing because it's two different women and two different things. So ella moshal loit shtei b'noisav. Rather, we can compare it to the story of Loit and his two daughters. So they intended, so we know, when they got Loit drunk and they had relations with him, they thought the whole world had been destroyed, and therefore they thought they have to rebuild the human race. So they were doing a L'Shem Mitzvah, so we can say on them, Tzadikim Yochuvam. On the other hand, Loit intended for Avera, then on him you can say, he's the sinner who ends up stumbling in him. In it, so there it is. The same derech. They're both doing the same thing, but one of them is called a tzaddik. One group is called a tzaddik, and the other one is pesheya. So the Gemara asks why. Who nami the shem mitzvah ichaven? How do you know? Maybe he also intended for the mitzvah. Okay, they got him drunk, but nevertheless, Tosfos actually points out that really ben noyach is actually mutter with his daughter. The Gemara in Sanhedrin lists six arayas that are also between Bnei Noach, and a daughter is not one of them. Nevertheless, Tosfos says, after the Mabul, the Goyim took on themselves more restrictions in the areas of arayas, because after all, arayas was one of the contributing factors to the Mabul in the first place. So now, therefore, by Loit's times, it was a well-established thing, and therefore, that's why they had to get him drunk in the first place, because otherwise, when he was sober, he never would have gone along with such a thing. But still, so then maybe we can say that he himself, whatever he knew about it, was actually the Shem Mitzvah as well. And the answer is Lois Sakadaitach. You can't think that way. because you have a pasuk before, right before Loit separates from Avraham in Parshas Lech Lecha, so the pasuk describes that Loit has to decide where to settle. So the pasuk goes, "Vayisa Loit es enav." Loit lifted up his eyes. "Vayaris kol kikar ha-yarden." He saw the whole valley of the Yarden, kichula mashka, that it was all well watered. So now the Gemara is going to, and that continues because it was like before the Eibishter destroyed Sodom and Amora, then it was a very fertile area. So now the point is, why does the Torah need to tell us that detail? Why does it need to tell us how fertile the place was and Kagan Hashem Keretz Mitzrayim? So therefore, Amar Rabbi Yechon Kol HaPosik Kol HaShem Aveira Nemar. Every phrase in that Posik or in that half of the Posik is actually hinting at an Aveira, Aveira meaning Znus, that Loit was into that kind of thing. The reason why he wanted to settle in Sodom is because of the Znus that they tolerated and encouraged over there. So now, therefore, when it ends up with his daughters, then he can't be Danim L'Kaf Zchus. You have to assume that he wanted to commit Znus. Namely, when the Pasuk starts off Vayisa Loit, so that relates to the Pasuk Vakisa Eshes Adonai Vesedeneha, that Esenaha, Potiphar's wife lifted up her eyes and decided to try to seduce Yosef. So the same way, Vayisa Loit means that he's lifting up his eyes for Znus. When the pasuk continues as Einav, that relates to Vayimash Shimshin El Oviv Oisa Kachli Ki Yashab Einai. When Shimshin is going to the land of the Plishtim, like we talked about yesterday, and finding a Plishti girl that he's going to marry. Okay, it was Megayer her, but still, the fact that he says Ki Yashab Einai, she's upright in my eyes, and that meant he's relying too much on his own judgment. The Gemara tells us in the Mishnah, tells in Sota, for that eventually the Plishtim gouged out his eyes. So we see therefore that Einav is related to Znus. Vayar, the pasuk continues by Loit that he saw, that relates to the pasuk Vayar Oisa Shchem Ben Chamor, that Shchem saw Dina and everything that developed from there. Esko Kikar Ayarden, when it continues that he saw the whole valley of the Yarden, why is it called Kikar? So that relates to the pasuk Kiba Ad Isha Zoyna Ad Kikar Lochem, because of an Isha Zoyna down to a loaf of bread, which means in Poshet Pshat, and the pasuk means, in other words, a person gets involved with Zoynas and he ends up losing all his money because he uses it on them and he ends up down to his last loaf of bread. So we see that Kikar is related to Znus. And when it says Kichula Mashke, the whole place is well watered, that relates to a pasuk where the Eibishter through the Novi Hoshea compares the Jewish people to a wife who's being unfaithful to her husband. She says, Elcha achre ma'avai, I will follow my lovers, meaning the Getchkes and the foreign nations, noisne lachmi umemai, where they give me my bread and my water, samri ufishti, my wool and my linen, shamni, my oil, vishikuyai, and my drinks. So therefore, so we see, Kikola Mashka relates to that word shikuyai. What?
Kitovli Admiata.
Yeah, well, eventually they realize that Kitovli Admiata, they realize that Yid realizes that he's better off with the Eibishter rather than with any of the others. But yeah. Elsewhere, by the way, the Gemara has a different understanding of Shikuyai, but anyway, the point is that in a simple sense, it means my drinks and it's related to Mashke. Okay, so we'll continue that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. We'll continue that on Sunday, rather, Be'ez Hashem. Yom Mashiach Ra'ola, Vavader Aleph. So again, talking about the roles that Mashiach is going to do, Hoga B'Torah V'Osek B'Mitzvahs, and then he convinces the whole Jewish people to follow the Torah. So we see from this three main points about Mashiach's Avoida. There's Mashiach's Avoida on his own, Hoga B'Torah. There's what he does for the Jewish people, with other people, the Yaakov Ko Yisrael. And then there's the Avoida regarding his portion of the world, L'yucham Milchamas Hashem, to fight and defeat all the Goyim surrounding us. Continuing on halachas of Eid of Chatzeres, the food for the Eid of Chatzeres has to be in a place where each one of the balibatim who's included in it is able to get their bein hashmoshes. Now the Alter Rebbe doesn't mention that point, but it is brought in various places in Masechta Eiruvin. So some examples that it gives in Eiruvin over there actually are in connection with an Eid of Tchumen. For example, you can't have it, let's say, in a closet where the only way to get into that closet is to do a malacha, because then bein hashmoshes you can't do malacha. So an example over here would be that, let's say, for example, there's a mess in the area of Rachman al-Tzlan, and one of the balabatim is a koyin, so then the Eruv is no good, because then he can't get there, Ben Hashmoshes, to be able to, it has to be in principle that he should be able to go into the house there and be able to retrieve the Eruv food, and under those conditions, he can't. They have similar other examples where that's the point. Another example, I suppose, might be, let's say you put it in the fridge and the fridge light is on, then you have a problem. You can't open the fridge. Bein hashmoshes, you want to turn on the light, so then that would be no good either.
Is he hanging on a wall somewhere in the shul?
Many times, yeah. Often they have it hanging on the wall in the shul, or if you have individual people make it in their houses, then they put it up on a shelf or something. Yeah, then that's fine. There's no problem with that.